The problem is that people think, well, I'm not that stressed. I handle stress pretty well. I have a lot of stress, but I deal with it. And then all of a sudden, they begin to feel not well. They may feel tired. Their moods may be down. They may be more anxious. They don't sleep as well. That's because what happens is that you have all the stress you've ever had in your life every day, and you add to it.
Welcome to U-Turns, the podcast where we talk about changing. I'm Lisa Oz.
And I am Jill Herzig. And Lisa and I are very good friends, but there's one thing that is super different about us. You can detox, and I cannot. Lisa is able to say, today, and possibly tomorrow and the next day, I'm not going to eat any solid food. It will be good for me. I will cleanse my body. And I can't, as you well know, I can't go more than, I don't know, maybe 2.5 hours without eating something. And I panic. I mean, I'm such a bad Jew. I can't even do this when I'm supposed to on the Day of Atonement. I have never been able.
But you're so good about what you eat normally. You don't even need to detox. You're so clean.
I don't know if I don't need to detox. I think maybe I do.
Well, detox is just one of the many things that I try to incorporate into my life to keep myself healthy because I have been guided by one of the great gurus of health, Dr. Woodson Merrill. And today he's going to help guide us through what we need to do, both of us, to keep healthy during periods of transition.
Good luck with me, Dr. Merrill.
when we're trying to get through changes in the most healthy and robust way. Woody, thank you so much for being here today.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Merrill is the founding executive director of the Center for Health and Healing and literally the authority on all things wellness.
One of them.
So how do we stay healthy when we're under stress and we're going through life changes and everything else is up in the air?
Well, it really is all about managing lifestyle, and stress is a core to that, so spiritual, and stress in your life should be balanced. You have to have not just stress balance, but you have to have all aspects of your lifestyle to be ultimately healthy. People ask me, what's the most important one? And that's the one you're not doing. So it's managing stress, it's eating correctly, it's removing toxins or detoxing, exercising enough, sleeping enough, and being connected. So if you're exercising great and you're eating well, but you're sleeping 4 hours a night, you're not going to get there. So it's about a life in balance and being centered. And stress is, of course, at the core of so much of that.
Can we break those down, unpack all six of those? Do you want to start with detoxing for Jill, since
yes,
she hates detoxing?
For my personal benefit. It's not that I hate it. It's that I've never been able to do it for more than 2 hours.
So, you know, when I wrote the detox prescription, it lays out a juice cleanse, which I think is a great way of doing it. And that one, you do actually take in food in liquid form every 2 or 3 hours, so you don't actually feel hungry. But you don't have to do it with juice. You can do it with foods, and you could do it with foods to help the body to clean itself, where your body spends so much of our time trying to get rid of toxins that are in our diet. It's really shocking what's happening to the state of food and how many pesticides and plasticizers there are in our diet. Like microplastics are in almost all the water now. So our body spends a good amount of time removing what shouldn't be in our system to get to what should be. So the idea is to try to be, first of all, remove the toxins from your life. It's pretty obvious, but there's a couple good guides to that. Environmental Defense Fund's got a great website, edf.org, that tells you about personal care and household cleaning products, and Environmental Working Group, EWG.org, about safe fish, for example, to eat, and organic food. So using those as guides to get rid of a lot of things you wouldn't think are bad, like household cleaning products that can affect estrogen disruptors in our system, et cetera, and then eating foods that are healthy, your body will detox. Food is very powerful for helping it to detox, but most people don't do the balance they need. And the key is fruits and vegetables and herbs and spices. And most people, more than half the population, is woefully short on those things. It could do it without some complex cleansing regimen.
All right, I'm going to continue to pull out your personal prescription for me with food. I focus on healthy foods, lots of fruits and vegetables. Is it so important that I eat organic that is the number one thing to think about? Because I remember, you know, publishing, actually, when I was the editor of the Oz magazine, the fact that the most important thing is to get tons of fruits and vegetables. If worrying about whether they're organic or not is preventing you from doing that, don't worry about it. Just eat as many as possible. But are you saying, actually, for detoxing purposes, do worry about that?
Well, for detoxing, yeah, you really should. You're trying to remove toxins and to put them back in the form of food that's not organic is kind of countermands what you're trying to do. So you don't have to be healthy. The key is to have 8 or 9 helpings, ideally of fruits and vegetables a day, and to have them as organic as possible. One of the things that EWG tells us is the clean 15 and the dirty dozen. So there are some foods you don't really have to have organic, like thick-skinned fruits, and others you really need to have organic, like thin-skinned fruits. So I think it's more important to get the total rainbow collection of fruits and vegetables in a plant-based diet every day and be as organic as you can without being fanatic, for sure.
But wouldn't that be a recommendation for all the time, not just
yes.
for a period of detox?
Yes.
You would,
yes.
Because the way that Joe lives is like a healthy living 365.
Yes.
With detox, it seems like it's a limited period of time. You shouldn't be detoxing your whole life, you know?
So you can actually eat a diet that's so clean you almost don't need to detox. So the detox is if you're in a situation where you actually feel like you've accumulated a lot of unhealthy habits and foods and exposures, then the idea of going on a cleanse is a great thing to do. And you could do a 5-day cleanse, do a 1-week cleanse. There's something called the Fasting Mimicking Diet of Walter Longo, director of USC Longevity Institute, I'm a huge fan of. You get to eat 850 calories a day, but it tricks the body into thinking you're starving. So the body resets the entire immune system as though it's saving you from starvation.
Oh.
And in a 5-day cleanse. So there are many ways of doing it. And you're correct, though. The key is all year long is to lead a clean, healthy dietary life. But it's more important almost to have the number of fresh fruits and vegetables than to have them all be organic.
We call it detoxing because that's what's happening technically, but fasting has been a huge part of human evolution.
Yes.
I think every culture has had event periods like celebrations or
rituals
yeah. of fasting. And naturally, when we were Paleolithic, we would have been fasting because we couldn't catch, you know, an antelope
yes.
that day. So I do think our body is kind of designed to fast for periods of time.
It's totally correct. And there are recent studies that are very exciting showing a 12 or 14-hour fast, it can have dramatic results. And that's just not eating from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. So it's not going on some crazy juice cleanser fast for a week. It's actually incorporating into your life very simple practices you can do on a regular basis without having to fast for 2 or 3 days. Sometimes water fast, if you go into really unhealthy and weak, can make you feel worse because you release a lot of the toxins that come out of the system, and then they can go into other cells before the body can actually eliminate them. So a water fast isn't really for everyone, which is why I prefer to have some form of food if you're actually trying to remove toxins, but very clean food. So the body spends much less time trying to get rid of additional problems and allows it to clean out what's accumulated.
Well, that's all music to my ears, that there is going to be some foods. What is a sign that you might feel physically or mentally that you kind of need to do a detox?
If you're feeling tired or not eating well, you're just not eating well, you know you're having a problem. Fatigue, joint pain, rashes, so it's kind of vague functional disorders can be bowel upset, indigestion, bloating, cramping, gas, being more reactive to the environment than you should be with nasal stuffiness, can pretty much manifest itself in any organ system of the body, just being off balance.
Yeah, that feeling off, I think, is something that at some point we've all experienced that.
So you have to take assessment. If your diet is incredibly clean and your environment's clean, then that's not where the money is in terms of trying to make a transformation. It may be sleep or stress or exercise. But if clearly you're challenging the environment, you know, they did a study recently. All California, all wines, all organic wines in California have glyphosate in them. So, you know, it's difficult to get away from everything.
Everything has
yes.
glyphosate in it.
Yes.
Yeah. Explain for everybody what that is.
Well, just glyphosate, which is a pesticide that's used primarily, it's used on wheat, but on many vegetables in particular, and grains. And it's used at a lot higher doses. It's one of the controversies behind the GMO.
Right.
GMOs if you're using GMO to make wheat to grow in sub-Saharan Africa to feed the people with almost no water available and it saves the population. That's a main amazing use of GMO. But if you're using it so you can put much more herbicides or pesticides on the plant to kill the animals before you kill the plant, and the problem is that the animals have modified their genes, and it takes more pesticides, so the GMO gets ramped up to allow the plant to take more pesticides before it gets harmed.
It's also used to make the wheat dry out faster, to desiccate it before they harvest it. So it makes it more lucrative and productive, but not better for you.
Yes, it's very tied into the media right now because of the GMO and the widespread use of it. One of the most widespread used pesticides and herbicides in Europe is disallowing it. But there are plenty of other things in the environment. I mean, household cleaners, or there's plenty of things that we're exposed to on a daily basis that are issues for our body and having a difficult time removing. So they look and they say the CDC showed there's an average of over 160 toxic chemicals, potentially toxic chemicals in our body, but none of them almost ever are at a level where it would technically cause a problem. But the question is, they haven't done is they're looking at, well, is there an accumulative effect of all of these being in your body at the same time? You know, if normal mercury is 10 and your level is 9 and you have 160 other chemicals, is that somehow additive?
Maybe 9 is not so safe.
Maybe it's not so great.
Even if you think you're living pretty healthfully, you're being exposed to toxins. Okay, we're going to come back and we're going to dig a little bit deeper into that. Before the break, we are digging into detoxing and the need to detox. Even if you seem to be living a healthy life like Jill, our environment is bombarding us with toxins all the time. And we are speaking with Dr. Woodson Merrill. Are there things, besides eating clean food, are there things we can do to accelerate the detoxing process? Are there certain supplements or herbs we should be taking to help us clear out those toxins?
So, yes. And when you said herbs, you might have been thinking of herbal supplements or capsules. But I just want to say that herbs and spices are nature's healing gift to us. They are so powerful. They're almost more powerful than food in terms of cleaning out the body as antioxidants, as anti-inflammatories. Turmeric, garlic, ginger, cinnamon, oregano, rosemary, unbelievably powerful in helping our body to repair itself. So I think that food being your medicine, they sell those certainly in capsule form. I think that turmeric or curcumin, which is the active ingredient, is one of my favorite nutrients. It really is nature's gift to us. It's an anti-inflammatory. It helps the body to detoxify. I love turmeric. It's pretty hard to eat 2 teaspoons of turmeric a day and everything. You could, but it's easier.
Make lots of curry.
Take it. Yeah, so I think I encourage people to actually use what I call an Indo-Mediterranean diet, where they actually use lots of herbs and spices, because they really do help the body in all of its repair processes dramatically. There are supplements that you normally have people do it through diet, but one of my favorites, it's very rare to cause an interaction with things, is NAC, NAC, or N-acetylcysteine. It really helps the body with its detoxification processes, and it's converted to glutathione, which is the body's master antioxidant. We can't make vitamin C, but instead of that, we make glutathione. So NAC is a precursor to that. It really helps the repair process. Then it depends on specific things you're looking at. For example, modified citrus pectin is helpful for pulling out heavy metals a little bit, not as much as the medications, but it can be helpful.
Cilantro with heavy metals.
Cilantro is great with heavy metals. Chlorella and spirulina that actually bind the heavy metals in the gut, so they don't get absorbed or important if you're still being exposed to those substances.
It sounds all like things to be found in Lisa Oz's kitchen. I'd like to say she's an incredible cook, and her cookbooks are full of all these ingredients, and now I know that she's secretly medicating all of us. That's what that's all about. So can you talk to us about some of the other fundamentals? So there's detoxing, which I promise to get into, but sleep, stress, let's talk about some of the others as well.
I'll pick stress. Because it's so pervasive, and it particularly, people say it's worse now than it's ever been, and it's, people's stress levels are incredibly high. I don't think the Depression was a picnic or World War II. So, it isn't like we haven't been subjected to massive levels of stress, but I think it's all pervasive now, and we're exposed to it so much more with the media on a daily basis that it actually is very destructive to our lives. And the problem is that people think, Well, I'm not that stressed. I handle stress pretty well. I have a lot of stress, but I deal with it. And then all of a sudden, they begin to feel not well. They may feel tired. They may, their moods may be down. They may be more anxious. They don't sleep as well. And they say, nothing's changed. And yet, that's because what happens is that you have all the stress you've ever had in your life every day, and you add to it. So it becomes cumulative. Like Dan Harris, who wrote the book 10% Happier, who all of a sudden had a panic attack on TV. Like, where'd that come from? I thought everything was cool. And it's an accumulation. So the key for stress is nipping it in the bud before it happens. And certainly exercise is helpful, sleeping enough. But, you know, some form of relaxation exercise, such as meditation, which is the ultimate one, is critically important. I tell every patient that I see virtually to begin meditation. And what's interesting is that the beginning of the day is the most important time to do it. I know twice a day is helpful.
That's exactly when I find it the hardest to tackle. I'm just the problem child of this podcast.
You don't fall back to sleep? I start to do TM in my bed, and I'm like, out.
Yeah, so doing it in your bed, that's called sleeping.
Right. That doesn't count.
No, you're sitting up.
Look how deeply she's meditating. She's not moving a bit.
With her feet up.
My mantra's a snore.
Feet up on the ceiling.
Exactly.
So, you know, the highest incidence of heart attack by 400% is on awakening.
Really?
Yeah, because you make most of your hormones between 3 and 5 a.m., cortisol, growth hormone, thyroid, and you're coming out of the dream state where you're trying to work out all your anxiety unsuccessfully, I include myself, and then you're loading all of the conscious, subconscious thoughts, worries, and concerns. They're going to pop out of your mind all day long, and if you have a bad heart, bam. So every spiritual practice, meditative practice, always has you doing it early in the morning. So when you first wake up, just to sit in a comfortable chair, cross-legged on the floor, and just go to your breath for ideally, you know, 10 to 15 minutes. And don't think of it as a burden. Some days you just can't get to it. Even if you sit at the edge of your bed for 2 minutes and go to your breath, just the intentionality that you're trying to relax. And then the more you do it, like exercise, the more of your day, things just don't get to you because your nervous system just doesn't want them to.
Why am I pretty sure that you're going to tell me that I can't be drinking coffee while I'm doing this?
And while you're doing it, probably not, or just before, not ideal.
Yeah, that wouldn't be managing.
But coffee's not that bad. It's just the amount of coffee that one does, if one's kind of living on it as a stimulant. So I would say that the majority of my people come into my office are dehydrated. They don't drink enough water. I cannot tell you how many hundreds of my patients feel like at 3 o'clock they need a cup of coffee or a Snickers bar. They get a brain fog or fatigue, and they're shocked to see an 8-ounce glass of water, the energy and the mind just zooms back. They're literally just dehydrated. Who drinks 5 to 6 glasses of non-caffeinated, minimally sweetened beverage by 3 p.m.? Not most. But you need a lot of water.
Do we need that much water?
A lot of water, yes. And I say water, but it's any non-caffeinated, minimally sweetened beverage, decaf coffee or herb tea, things like that.
Because the caffeine flushes the water out of us, so it doesn't count.
Yeah, the caffeine's a diuretic, so it's kind of, you kind
sets
of...
sets you back.
Are barely even, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, okay.
You mentioned sleep as, we were talking about meditation, not related, but can we delve into that pillar?
Yeah, so before the electric light bulb was invented, the average hours of sleep that the American got was 10.2 hours.
And now it's
6.9 for women and 6.7 for men. So it isn't like that our genetics have changed, actually, just that our lifestyle has changed, and we still need sleep. And most all the studies, now there's some outlying studies that say you can get by in 5 or 6, but most of them show really 8 hours is the sweet spot for really getting repair and regeneration of your mind from stress and also from physically. And so I think that we're definitely an underslept nation.
There was just some article that popped up on my news feed actually yesterday that said that people who got more than 8 hours of sleep had a higher mortality rate. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, I did.
Or what the relevance of that is.
I didn't go into the details of it, but I would bet that that's not most people's problem. So I think in excess of anything, but I can't imagine. 8 to 9 hours has been shown to be fine.
I love 9 hours.
I think
of
if somebody's sleeping 10, 11
fantastic.
Hours, you may need to make sure that things are okay. Why are they needing that?
Well, you said the average person slept that much before the light bulb.
Yeah,
so.
I know.
We're probably designed for that evolutionarily, no?
So that one study I haven't looked at yet. I need to because I don't get it.
So I would say most people have trouble sleeping, though.
Yeah.
I know Mehmet talks about it all the time. When you have patients come in who are really struggling either to fall asleep or wake up in the middle of the night and can't get back to sleep,
right?
How do you help them?
So most people can get to sleep, especially if they're not sleeping because they're usually pretty exhausted. If you can't get to sleep, you can do relaxing things and take a relaxing bath with lavender or Epsom salt in or put on a candle, read a book, do meditation, do breath work, do a little bit of yoga, just to turn off the mind and turn off the blue lights, for God's sakes. The blue light that comes from computers and iPhones is very, very agitating to the brain. You could turn on a blue light blocker on Apple devices. It's called a night shift, and block the blue light, which is the light that emanates from electronic devices. It's very agitating. So turn that off an hour before you go to bed also. The bigger
no
problem
laptop
with people,
cuddling. No.
At least not without the blue light blocker as a compromise, like with my kids sometimes. The bigger problem people have is they wake up 3 or 4 in the morning after a couple REM cycles and can't get back to sleep.
Yes, this is my husband's problem.
So the thing is, when you're waking up, you're always coming out of a REM cycle. So you go down deep, stage 1, 2, 3, 4, deep sleep, and then you come up through a REM cycle up to just below consciousness and then go back down 1, 2, 3. You go through these rhythms of every hour and a half or so during the night. When you're coming up from a REM cycle, then it's often after 2 or 3 REM cycles, people pop up to consciousness. If you wake up and you start thinking, and almost always the thought, myself included, it's not a great thought. It's not like, oh my God, the world's wonderful,
thought.
I can't wait to get back. It's the problem you couldn't fix the day before. It's almost always a negative thought. You've had, I almost can't help you. You need to, no, not that bad. There's some
I'm not going to tell
do.
My husband
no,
that.
But the thing is what the best thing to do is what I call dream remembrance. And that is, as you just get the glimmer that you're about to come out of the dream, you'll get the awareness. And now that I've told you, if you don't say you remember dreams, you'll be aware of this. You'll be coming out of a dream. If it's just the glimmer of a lamppost or a scary dream, it doesn't matter. Hang on to the dream. You'll see a thought wanting to come. You'll see that, you know, mortgage payment thing issue coming up or whatever. You've got to push it back like a mind control exercise. Keep in the dream, keep in the dream. And 50% of the time, your brain will take you back in the next REM cycle. If you wake up and start worrying,
I've never heard that before. I think that is.
You're going to have to do some kind of relaxation exercise, but which can be helpful. But you've got dream remembrance is really important, and not doing things that sedate you at sleep, like having to drink late at night. It may help you get to sleep, but it wears off, and after 2 REM cycles, and you pop up
and you bounce.
Pop up more quickly into consciousness.
When we come back, we are going to tackle the other 3 pillars of health with Dr. Woodson Merrill. We are back and we are talking about staying healthy with Dr. Woodson Merrill. We have covered 3 of the pillars of health: sleep, stress, and detox. We've got 3 more. What would be your...
What's our next on your priority list?
Yeah.
I think connection is really important because, you know, I'm very spiritual by nature. But even if you're an atheist, I mean, being connected, it could be connected to nature, to your family, to a higher power. I think that connection has been shown to a pet and animal is very powerful. Effect on helping longevity, the immune system, heart disease. It's really key to be connected. And whether you do it through prayer or you do it through being out in nature, the thing about forest bathing that came from Japan, Scotland now, doctors prescribing taking a walk in the woods.
Yeah.
I think that being connected to nature, we're just disconnected. We lead fast, busy lives, and we're alienated from each other. We're very insular often, and we're not connected with nature. We don't really, part of the problem with people not appreciating what's happening with the climate. They're just not connected. I love Larry Dossey saying that anybody who should vote on anything to do with the environment is required to go camping for 1 week a year.
Yeah,
absolutely. Nature.
I think I saw that we spend, you know, I think the average person is outside less than an hour a day now.
I mean, yeah, and outside is walking from one building to another on concrete sidewalks.
People that I love is Justice William O. Douglas, and Supreme Court Justice, and what he used to do is every day take a walk in the woods, and he said he made all his important decisions while he was walking in the woods. It was just mindfulness walk. It would just come together.
Yeah.
So
what if you're living in a city, though? I mean, a lot of our listeners may be
Jill lives in New
Heart
York.
Of Brooklyn, yeah. But Prospect Park means a lot to me. I have to say, no, it's true. It's
is
true.
It just parks? Do you
medicinal.
Need it every day?
No. Part of the thing about being connected is really about being gracious and grateful. And that's part of it needs to be incorporated as part of your life. You just need to be on a daily basis, feel connected and want to be of a giving nature and grateful for what you have and gracious. And then try to make the world a better place. And that's the easy platitude. But really, it's what we people need to do. It's a very selfish world we're in right now. And if we need to be much more outgoing with others and being connected in any way we can, whether we have a pet or we haven't, you know, been in touch with a family member, even at work, how you react to the people around you.
Facebook doesn't count, right?
Boy, quite the, yes,
quite the
anti,
yeah.
Anti-connection.
Yeah. All right, so give us another pillar then of health.
Exercise. Well, that's interesting because, you know, you don't have to do a lot of exercise to be healthy. A brisk walk 20 minutes a day is enough to reduce the risk of heart disease and increase longevity. So more is better, but being active is the key. And kind of an ideal that I would tell most of my patients is try to do aerobics for 20 or 30 minutes, ideally 3 or 4 times a week. It could be anything. It could be biking. It could be more like a race walk, swimming. It doesn't matter. Just so you get your heart rate up well, the goal is 220 minus your age and then 80% of that for most people, let's say who are in the middle age, it's about 120. So you can stop and take your pulse for 10 seconds to see if it's having 20 beats. And you want to do that for about 20 to 30 minutes. And then you want to do, if you did that, a couple sets of crunches where your back stays on the floor and knee push-ups or the plank, that's it. That's like a full workout. So it doesn't take a lot.
You know, it's funny because you're talking about these pillars as if they're something separate, but it looks like they're all connected because when you're talking about exercise, it's probably the best and most effective way to deal with both stress and sleep, right? And when you're talking about detox, the most effective way to keep your body detoxified is how you eat. So it seems like all of these pillars are actually rather than pillars, they're kind of interconnected.
Completely. It's a web, just like our body is a web, kind of in psychoneuroimmunology, the mind, the nervous system, immune system, they're the same thing. They're just interconnected. And so are all the lifestyle factors. Like exercising enough will burn calories, but it also suppresses the appetite to eat more.
Just from personal experience, I've asked my husband, and he said it's actually true for women, but not for men. I find I cannot lose weight if I'm exercising. I don't know. It doesn't feel like I'm eating more, but apparently I am. And if I want to drop weight fast, I just don't exercise when I'm eating less. And what is that about?
That's one that's difficult to explain. Obviously, you're putting on muscle. It's not about the weight, just remember. And so one shouldn't be a slave to the scale. It's about body fat. So really, it's about your waistline. So if your pants are getting tighter, it's not muscle, right? So you really want to be aware of what your kind of body fat percentage is without looking at the
scale. Aerobic exercise does make me hungry. You know,
some people it does. Some people, particularly if they go into it not having eaten. So one of the things to do is actually to have a bit of something to eat before, and you actually then satiate the need for calories with what you need for the exercise. So maybe like an hour before.
So you don't sort of get yourself into a deficit hole.
Yes. And CoQ10 is interesting studies on coenzyme Q10 showing actually improves exercise recovery. So some people will use that an hour before exercise as well.
Does it help make the exercise more effective?
It helps the recovery of the muscles because it helps the mitochondria produce energy better for the recovery that's needed when you traumatize the muscles from exercise and it has to repair, and it gives it more energy for the repair process to then make you stronger for the next exercise.
Okay.
And so diet is the final sort of pillar of good health, but it seems like, you know, it's all about the fruits and vegetables that you were talking about in the detox.
It is. Michael Pollan is, you know, basically it's a plant-based diet. The more fruits and vegetables you eat, there's no way you can match the power of the phytochemicals that are in fruits and vegetables with really any other food. It's interesting because a lot of people are going to keto diets and paleo diets. And for some, they work, but at the sacrifice of a more balanced diet. I think that for a lot of people, when they get older, you know, and the metabolism is tanking rapidly after 40 or 50, and believe me, I've been there, and it's not a pretty picture. What you have to do to stay, you know, trim, hopefully stay trim, is that you really have to be aware. The grains are something that for a lot of people are really do sabotage some bread, pasta, rice, rolls, potatoes. Those, that goes to fat so quickly if you're not really burning up a lot of calories. And also hidden oils. Oils are highly caloric. They're very, very healthy, but they're very caloric. So that's something a little bit on the diets that people are using to try to lose weight. But the goal is to ultimately have a balanced diet, have a rainbow diet with fruits and vegetables.
And ketogenic diets are certainly not balanced diets.
No, lean protein, clean fish if you can get it.
If you have someone that will come to you, a patient who is morbidly obese, and they need to drop weight, would you put them on a ketogenic diet to get to a healthier playing weight and then have them eat more sustainably? Or would you just say, let's do this really slowly?
You want something sustainable. So, you know, most people who are or morbidly obese have been through some kind of weight loss fad in the past, and they've regained the weight. The problem is when I used to work at a liquid weight loss center when I was in my residency moonlighting, and what would happen is people lose weight very quickly. The problem is when you lose weight fast, you lose more muscle. And when you put weight back on, you gain fat. Mm. So if you do a yo-yo, actually have a higher body fat percentage than you did before you lost the weight.
Over time, you're changing the makeup of your body.
Yeah, and so you really need to actually do something you can. I love Weight Watchers. I mean, I don't know if we're supposed
Jill
to talk products,
for
but I think it's,
and we did not arrange this ahead of time.
No, we did not.
I think it's an amazing organization because what they do is they teach you to eat for life, and I think that there are many other organizations I'm sure that are quite good like that also. But I think to actually make a change that you can, it's sustainable, and they have you enjoy the food. Deprivation is not fun. The keto diet is not fun. You know, fats and protein with a lot of vegetables is not what some people enjoy. With something like a balanced diet with Weight Watchers, you just change your life gradually, and eventually you get there.
And it's really a behavior change company.
Yes.
It's not a diet company.
Yes, and you know, you for example, a tablespoon of any oil, whether it's olive oil or beef, has about the same calories, around 120 calories. So just one tablespoon a day of oil is equivalent of a pound a month or 12 pounds a year of fat. So you can actually make small changes and have big results if you're not doing something as a quick fad. Yeah, if you want to lose it fast, you can do something like the keto diet. Or some people get lucky and the ABO diet works for them. It's very idiosyncratic whether those work. The keto diet will work for a lot of people, but it really puts you in an altered metabolic state, which, first of all, for some people with health conditions, is not safe. But other people are just really... The other thing about the keto diet is that you want to be in ketosis, which means you want to be eating a lot of fat. As soon as you come out of that, all the fat you're eating has a much greater chance of going to fat than as opposed to fat burning when you're in ketosis. So if you slip from it, you're actually not in
a
good place.
So one potato chip and it's all over.
It's like an orthodoxy, yes.
About balance, all about life and balance.
Such great information for keeping us healthy during our personal U-turns. Dr. Woodson Merrill, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Dr. Merrill's book, The Detox Prescription, is available, and I think we all wish you were our personal doctor, and this book is probably the closest you can get to it. Thanks again, Dr. Merrill.
Thanks for having me. Great.
Connect with us. Tell us your health transformation stories at U-turns podcast.com.